is Joy's Community Church, where you can wake up to the love of God, grow in Christ, and step out in service. You are listening to our weekly sermon featuring Pastor John Kyler.
A woman by the name of Fatima was a star member of her marketing team at a large multinational food company. She consistently hit her benchmarks and her goals. She invests long hours in her work, has built relationships with her colleagues and whom she deeply values. Her senior managers think that she's one of the company's highest potentials. But outside the office, she admits that she feels stagnant in her job, trapped by the tensions between the day-to-day demands and what she really wants to be doing, which is exploring more of the company's social media and marketing avenues. She'd like to look for another job, but there's not much out there. Sticking it out seems like her best and perhaps her only option. She says, "I'm still working hard, but I'm stuck. Every week I feel less and less motivated, and I'm beginning to wonder why I ever took this position in the first place." Vocation, work, the thing we do every day. Sometimes we do it at home, sometimes we do it in the marketplace. Whatever it is, it shapes the circumstances and the patterns of our lives. Yet we come to worship week after week, Sunday morning after Sunday morning. But then we go into Monday, and the two worlds can seem far apart. Is there any way to bridge to the two, to bring them together? Is there a way to redeem our work and experience it is God's primary location for transforming us into his fully devoted followers? In the beginning, God worked. And in his work, he designed it into humanity. That is, work has become a component of what it means to be human. It's an essential aspect of loving God in his created world. It's a vital part for loving our neighbors. To work is to join God in the cultivation of the common good, whether we get paid for it or not. God placed humanity in the Garden of Eden to care for it and to cultivate it. It was a commission to be fruitful. And as they were fruitful, they would extend the boundaries of the garden and shape it so that it reflected God's character. We know the story oh too well. For all was good until the deceiver showed up and he said to them, "Your boss is a micromanager. What you need is more autonomy." Humanity became the reference point of making decisions about what was good and true and right and evil. As a result, sin entered the world and the whole created order was turned in on itself. From cradle to grave, life was characterized by toil, sweat, labor, frustration, along with fruitfulness. But in the middle of it comes a note, a grace note, if you will. In the middle of the text that I read for you, God says to the deceiver, "Cursed are you. From now on, you will eat the dust of the earth, and your existence will be characterized by strife and enmity between your children and the children of the seed of the woman. You will bruise his heel, but he will crush your head." It's a grace note of the coming of God's redemption for our broken and twisted world. A gospel that tends to transform not just the individual worker, but the workplace and the world as well. The idea of agriculture becomes an image for shaping culture and for our work in the world. Work that bears fruit, no doubt, but always it's tangled up with some labor and toil. Often it's characterized by thorns and thistles. This is what the author to the book of Ecclesiastes describes as vanity of vanities, or the vapor of life. He describes it as trying to catch the wind in a jar. In that book, the author, who is identified as a teacher, or probably more realistically, the philosopher, provokes his readers to consider the meaning and the purpose of life. He does this through kind of an autobiography. He pours himself into everything under the sun. That phrase, under the sun, is key to interpreting and understanding the book of Ecclesiastes. If you just start out reading it cold, you might end up a little depressed and overwhelmed. But under the sun is a phrase that refers to life without reference to God. It's living life from the perspective that all that is all that you see, or all that you see, rather, is all that there is. So the philosopher, the teacher, says, I started out seeking wisdom. I applied my mind to study and I explored wisdom of all that is done under the heaven. And I learned that this was chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. Then next he said, I'm going to pour myself into pleasure. And he says, I denied myself nothing that my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. And all of this, too, was meaningless and chasing after wind. Till finally he pours himself into his job, his vocation. He said, I gave myself to achievement and success. I undertook great projects, and I built houses, and I planted vineyards, and I made gardens and parks. I made reservoirs to water the groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born to my house. I amassed silver and gold for myself and the treasure of kings and provinces. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me, and yet when I surveyed all my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. And chasing after wind, nothing was gained under the sun. Despite his enormous professional success and wealth, the philosopher hated life. He realized that all that he accumulated would be left to somebody else, and in the end, he didn't know if that person would be wise or a fool. And somebody else would eat the fruit of his labor. The philosopher recognizes that there was nothing to be gained under the sun apart from God, who had set eternity in the hearts of humanity. I probably don't have to remind you that every job has its thorns and thistles, toils and sweat, even as we look for and enjoy the fruit of our labors from time to time. You might find thorns and thistles in simply the environment that you work in. Maybe your boss is someone who micromanages you, and your coworkers are annoying gossips, and you have to deal with their posturing day after day. Or maybe you feel like you're being asked to compromise your ethics, and you have to compete with your coworkers, and you just can't trust anyone. Maybe your job has little sense of accomplishment. One of the jobs that pushed me towards college was working in a factory. My task was to, when you get a little pint of Häagen-Dazs ice cream, the cap on top of that little thing would come off of this machine, and end up in a little trough, and I had to measure them out in 50s. I didn't even have to count them. There was just a little lever. As soon as it filled up, I knew there were 50 in there, and I'd have to push the lever down and slide those lids into a box. 8 hours a day. For fun, I did it backwards. There was little sense of accomplishment in that job. The one task I did was separated from dozens, maybe two dozen other tasks that related to an end product that I never saw. That happens not just for factory workers, but today, and when there's an overemphasis on efficiency and one thing gets sliced off from another and we do the same task over and over and over again. Or we don't have any real sense of having done anything or contributed to anything. This is true for pastors as well as assembly line workers, where tangible results aren't always present, and you ache to see, is there anything that has really changed here? Sometimes we experience thorns and thistles just from the sheer fact of being isolated. We work to provide for a family, but commute long hours, which means that we leave home before they're out of bed, and we get home back home after they're in bed. Or maybe you're an extrovert you've been told that you're going to now share an office, and you have to work at home 3 days a week, and you're isolated and alone and wondering, why do I do this? Because it just doesn't fit who I am. Sometimes we experience frustration and toil because our aspirations exceed both our abilities and our opportunities, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. You might be a great chef and but running a business isn't your thing, and it's holding you back. Or maybe you're an aspiring author, but you can't seem to find time to work on the manuscript for your dream bestseller. Or maybe you're a farmer with great knowledge and equipment and skills, but you're limited by weather conditions. Or you're an excellent home builder, but the economy is down and there's no jobs to be had or houses to be built. Or maybe you're just stuck in the black hole of work. Work that is never ending. A job, a to-do list that's constantly growing. Or maybe you're in a work that you just can't seem to get beyond the end of it, like fighting poverty that never ends, or fighting human trafficking that seems to just keep going and growing. Is there any real difference going on through what I do? No doubt you've heard the familiar saying, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. It's the holy grail, the promise of escape from that quiet desperation that plagues humanity. But is it really true? Is it sound advice? Is it possible to love what you do and still hate your job? Yes. In every job, there is always toil and thorns and thistles, along with the fruit, even in work that you end up love doing. The bottom line is that there's no perfect job, or at least no job without thorns and thistles. Even among those of us who are fortunate to do what they love, we may still end up at times frustrated and aggravated and caught up in just the labor of it all. And all of those things that I outlined for you as possible ways of experiencing thorns and thistles, you can experience them as a minister. I was at a pastor's gathering not so long ago, and one of the statistics they threw out was that every 6 minutes, some pastor leaves the ministry because of frustration. I don't know, that's That's a lot of pastors. Like, we just lost five of them already. And that very few pastors ever make it past the 10-year mark. So I consider myself very fortunate. You can have experienced all or most of those things that I outlined for you, but you could also experience those as a parent. Long hours wondering, does this really work? You know, extrovert, if you're an introverted parent and you've got extroverted kids, oh man, is that challenging. There is absolutely no place to hide. No place to hide. Those of you who have small kids know that. Sorry. But when it comes to thorns and thistles, they really come from two places, right? If you boil it all down, they're either internal, things that rise up within us that we look for satisfaction in a place that we're never really intended to get it, or they're external, that is, they come from our environment. So how do we find redemption in all of our work? The philosopher puts it this way in chapter 3. In referring to God, he said, he's now realizing that if you work just for everything under the sun and that excludes God, who has put eternity in your heart, then you're going to be frustrated forever. But to find rest and contentment through your relationship with God in the context of what you do, he writes, he has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in their toil. This is a gift from God. I know that everything God does will endure forever, and nothing can be added to it, and nothing take it from it. And God does this so that we will fear him. Finding rest and contentment in our work takes what Amy Wesenewski describes as job crafting. She's a professor of organizational behavior at Yale School of Management. And her research group studied janitors working at University Hospital, and they separated them into two groups. One group was those who worked solely for the pay that they got from their task. They described their jobs very much in line with their job description. They empty garbage, they mop floors, they change sheets, they do laundry. It was pretty straightforward. But there was another group, same job, same hospital, who found their task as a janitor enjoyable and deeply meaningful, as well as important. They did so by paying attention to the patients in the rooms that they cleaned. Some of them said that when I go into the room, I try to notice if this patient is happy or sad, if they've had frequent visitors or not. And if they haven't had visitors in a while, I circle back at the end of my round to talk with them and to chat with them. Some outside of their job description said that they would walk elderly visitors through the hospital to the parking garage to make sure they didn't get lost on their way. One who worked on a floor where patients were in a coma said that part of her job was to change the pictures in the image on the wall in the patient's room and hope that somehow that the rearranging of the images would stir some consciousness in their patients. When asked, is this really part of your job description? She said, no. It's not part of my job, but it's part of me. There is a job crafting that goes on that transforms one worker from another. And she describes this job crafting as that thing that workers do to redesign their job from the bottom up in ways that foster engagement and job satisfaction and resilience in thriving. It can be reduced to three areas: changing the tasks themselves, or rewriting the tasks, or adding to the tasks, so that they are part of me and not necessarily part of the description. There are the relationships, pouring yourself into the relationships in a way that reflects the goodness of God and draws out the best in others. And then there's the changing of perspective and seeing your job from a different angle. Whether our thorns and thistles come from the environment or from within ourselves, the gospel of Jesus Christ comes to redeem us and to enliven us so that we might find rest even in the midst of our toil. Listen to Jesus' words in Matthew's gospel. "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." Think that applies to your work? It applies to every corner of your life. "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." There is a yoking that Jesus calls us to that can transform any environment in which we work. When our souls are at rest with Christ, we no longer have to pull our meaning from the world in which we work, but rather we let Christ in us supply meaning for ourselves and to our work. There's so much more to it. I hope to explore. We have one more session next week, but then we'll return to this theme again, as I think it's important for us to consider our vocational discipleship. And that applies to those who are actually employed, those who are unemployed, those who have a calling or a vocation outside of work. Some people they can't find it in the context of their job, so they need to do it outside the job. It's reported that somebody asked Albert Einstein, "What's the best job for physics, to do physics?" And Einstein said, "Be a plumber. Because do your plumbing work, and then when you're done, you can do all the physics you want with nobody to bother you." Right? Makes sense? Yeah. But Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened." It doesn't matter if you're an engineer, or a mother, or a father, or an accountant, or a pharmacist. There will be fruit, but as long as we live in this world, it will be tangled up with the thorns and thistles. Can we change our perspective and recraft our jobs? If you would like help with that and somebody to stand alongside of you, our prayer ministers will be available for you in the back corner between now and the end of the service. But let me close with a prayer. Holy Lord, you are the author of all good work. We pray that you would open our eyes to see where you're already present in our workplaces, waiting for us to respond and follow you. Amen.
Thank you for listening. To find out more, check us out at storeschurch.org.